morning. My name is Tom Polversny, President of the Experimental Aircraft Association, and I'm pleased to have you here with what we call Principals Forum. I'd like to introduce, starting from your right, my left, President of NBA, Ed Bolin, President of GAMMA, Pete Bunce, President of HAI, Matt Sakaro, and President of AOPA, Craig Fuller. Let's welcome them here to Oshkosh. Now, one of the reasons we're here this morning is to talk about some issues that are important to the aviation community, but more importantly, to demonstrate and show firsthand the collaborative relationship between the respective organizations, NBA, GAMMA, HAI, AOPA. As we've said on many occasions, there's more than enough issues that we have to address on behalf of the general aviation community, and we all have limited resources in terms of financial resources and human resources. So the context of collaboration is extremely important, representing and working on behalf of the general aviation community. And I want to stress, we represent the entire spectrum of the general aviation community. One of our themes for Oshkosh this year is Stand Up for General Aviation. Well, you have outstanding staffs for each of these organizations that work on your behalf in Washington and in the field. But that's where it doesn't stop there. It is important that our members, the pilot community, aviation enthusiasts, become an integral part of standing up for general aviation. There's many ways you can do it. You can write to your congressman. You can fly a young eagle. You can participate in many outstanding programs that take place around the country. Your voices need to be heard, both by your representing organizations, our elected officials, and the aviation community. One of the most important things that we have to do is grow the aviation community, and we'll talk about that a little later today. We have to understand that general aviation represents a broad spectrum of the aviation community. It isn't just home-built or antiques or vintage or certificated airplanes in single-engine fuel or piston airplanes. It's jets, it's turbines, it's pistons, it's multi, it's single, it's the entire spectrum. One of the most important programs we have this year at Oshkosh is called Fly for Life. If you haven't visited that, you should, because what it does is tells the story of how aviation, general aviation, serves the public sector from a faith-based standpoint and humanitarian. And when you visit there, it's overwhelming to see in one place the magnitude and breadth and depth of services provided by general aviation, pilots, and their airplanes. Today we'd like to cover some important subjects and open up for question and answer. I'd like to start off with Ed Bolin, who's going to discuss how general aviation is under attack at this particular point in time, the entire spectrum of general aviation. So Ed, would you start it off?
Well, thanks, Tom, and congratulations to you and everyone at EAA. It's just been a great air venture so far, and I think sometimes when we are all here together, sharing our passion for general aviation and being enthused about all the things that fly and being around like-minded and like-spirited people, it's easy to forget some of the realities that are really happening in the world. And to state the blindingly obvious, I think all of you understand that for the better part of the past year, general aviation has been under attack. The attack started primarily when automobile executives from Detroit flew to Washington, and it has been primarily focused at business aviation. The question that took place that day was initially, was that an appropriate use of business aviation? But within the 24-hour media cycle, the question began to be raised, is there ever an appropriate use of business aviation? Is it excessive? Is it over the top? Is it unnecessary? Is it in the way? And what questions were being asked of business aviation, I think everybody here at Oshkosh understands, were really questions that were being asked of the general aviation community. And I think what we have had over the course of the past year, as our public image has been challenged, is probably the most important challenge that has ever faced our community. And the reason I say that is you all know what the other issues are. You've got user fees, we've got large aircraft security programs, we've got environmental issues. But at the end of the day, if we go to Capitol Hill, if we go to the administration, if we go to the press and say we're concerned about user fees because they could kill general aviation, or we're worried about security regulations because they could kill general aviation, or we're worried about environmental regulations that could kill general aviation, the fact of the matter is, if our image is that of being excessive, unnecessary, and in the way, no one is really going to care if they kill general aviation. So the challenge to all of us, from whatever segment of GA we may be from, is to collectively tell the story about the value of general aviation to the United States. We've got to make sure that the public understands that we're essential. We're essential to our nation's job base, with over 1.2 million good jobs, manufacturing jobs, pilot jobs, maintenance jobs, jobs at FBOs, jobs in catering, jobs in insurance, advertising, finance. General aviation means jobs. General aviation is also important as a lifeline to communities with little or no airline service. Last year, over 100 communities lost their airline service. Those places depend on general aviation. And companies, small and large, depend on general aviation to be productive, to be efficient, to help them compete in the marketplace. And as Tom said, there's the humanitarian efforts. Thousands of flights that take place every day all around the country, sometimes in an emergency, sometimes not, but all enormously valuable to our country. And the reality is, we are essential. And we've got a good story to tell. And I'm so pleased with Tom's statement that this year's Air Venture is focused on stand up for GA, because that's really what this is all about. We are under attack. Business aviation has been the pointed end of the spear, but it's an attack on all of us, and our futures are at stake. And so stand up, speak out for general aviation. You know, in Washington, we'll be working on programs to do that. We've got our No Plane, No Gain program. There's GA Serves America, but at the end of the day, it's up to all of you. It's not as much paid advertising. It is your active involvement at telling the story. We're making progress on the large aircraft security program because we generated over 7,000 comments to the docket. We had 5 public hearings around the country. All of them were oversubscribed, with people willing to stand in line to speak for 3 minutes. Together, we can make a difference, and I think we are making a difference. But let's not stop now, because this attack is real. It's serious, and our entire future is at stake. Thank you.
What's important to all of us is fuel, fuel availability, and alternative fuels, and Pete Bunce would like to talk about that.
Thanks, Tom. Well, EAA had a great forum yesterday, and it was really talking to a packed audience in one of the pavilions here, and it was good to see that so many in our community are so interested in this and trying to find the solutions. It is a very, very complex problem. And up on the stage yesterday, we had a representative from the EPA, a representative from the FAA, EAA's experts, AOP's experts, and then GAMA, the experts from the manufacturing side. And intuitively, you would think in this great time of technological innovation, and especially with all the emphasis on fuels out there, biofuels, synthetic fuels that are going to power the commercial airline fleet out there, that there would be an easy solution. You would think that we could find the silver bullet, that we can just say, okay, let's go ahead, and that fuel's out there, we can find it, we can grab a hold of it, and we can just get rid of unleaded, or get rid of leaded fuel, 100 low lead, in a heartbeat, and it can power everything. Well, I'm here to tell you, it's not there. 20 years of work. All of these associations have been involved in it. We've worked very hard all together to try to get the FAA to keep funding a test center up in New Jersey so that we can keep it viable, but we have not been able to find the answer. There is not the silver bullet. That's currently something available today, and we are just plain running out of time. The EPA is throwing it at us and saying, we want a timeline for a transition of this industry to an unleaded fuel. And if you guys don't give it to us, we're going to dictate something. And when you start looking at this situation and you find out all the tentacles, the problems with the distribution network, the problems if we try to have our FBOs have 2 fuel tanks for avgas, you start looking at then the cost throughout the system of a dual fuel strategy,
or the cost if we have a boutique fuel that only a few people produce, pretty soon we're all going to be out of business, because we all know what happens when the price of aviation fuel skyrockets. We saw that last year. So it is our job to try to keep the price down, to find a solution that will fit the majority of the fleet, and try to find then modifications that could go into place for the fleet that has to be modified to be able to use the fuel. Now, if you've read the great articles that EAA has put out, AOP has put out, if you read the recent article by Mac McClellan from Flying Magazine, you get a very, very good detailed analysis of what's happening and why the issue is so complex. But when you start to boil it down and you say, okay, what are our alternatives, it's looking right now like either we're going to have to go with a 94 unleaded, basically take the lead out of the fuel that we have today, or, and possibly, so it could be both, that we try to push some alternatives with a synthetic fuel. Now, I'm talking synthetic. It's not bio, because right now bio is ethanol. Ethanol is bad. There are a lot of people that don't get that point. Ethanol is bad for us. But there are ways to take bio feedstock, synthesize certain carbon strains from that, and produce a synthetic fuel. And a company that a lot of people have heard about is Swift, out of working with Purdue University, that's got some capability there. But what we're concerned about is the distribution network, and if we go and throw all our eggs in that basket, and all of a sudden that fuel, because of the distribution network, costs us $6-$7 a gallon, everyone knows what will happen. So the EPA has given us an opportunity to come forward to them in November with a plan, a transition plan. We don't have to say this is exactly the fuel, but we have to say what our plan is to get there. And all of our associations are going to be working very closely together. But the politics of this starts to get complex, because there are a lot of manufacturers out there that don't want the finger pointed at them when they have to go back to the customer and say, oh, by the way, an airplane that we sold to you not too long ago is going to have a major modification done to the engine before it reaches its overhaul time. So the important part of this whole thing is there is going to be pain. There's going to be pain for all the customer groups out there. There's going to be pain for the manufacturers. But if we do it together, we sign documents together that says this is the coordinated plan that we've all come together to do, we can make it happen. And then the key will be educating all of our members about the importance of working this together, not finger pointing at each other, but to do this in a cooperative form. Because I'll tell you, the alternative is having the EPA dictate to us and dictate to us a timeline that will park airplanes. And none of us want to see that happen. That is the worst thing that can happen, if we start parking mass amounts of airplanes because we didn't control our own destiny. So stay attuned to the information that our associations are going to put out, but know and be confident that we are working this issue together, because this is a huge one for the entire piston community of aviation.
Thank you, Pete. We've touched upon briefly the contributions that your innovation makes to society, and Matt, if you'd expand upon that for us, I'd appreciate it. Matt Zaccaro.
Yeah, I'd like to... I cheated. I wrote down some notes because I want to give you some numbers, and I don't want to rely on my memory for them. But in essence, I thought it might be a good idea to give you a brief overview of the Helicopter Association, our segment of the industry. We're new to the forum, and I think it might be helpful. But we're the International Trade Association. We represent about 3,000 member organizations and individuals, and we estimate that our members fly about 5,500 helicopters, and they do that about 2.5 million flight hours a year. The other aspect of the organization is our foundation, similar to all the other associations. We have educational initiatives, scholarships, two projects we're proud of. We have a virtual museum that we're creating in trying to recognize the heritage of the industry, so that anybody anywhere in the world will be able to go up on the virtual museum and have everything that we have about the helicopter industry. The other one is the orientation towards safety, certainly. As with any aviation organization, we're focused on safety as a priority. We do numerous seminars and forums. One thing we've noticed, though, is that we don't have enough focus on helicopter safety and safety forums and the flight instructor refresher clinic. We put one on at our annual Heli Expo show, and it's pretty much sold out all the time because we focus specifically on helicopters. So we're going to be expanding that initiative with the FAA to have more dedicated helicopter safety forums around the country and flight instructor clinics. The other thing is pretty similar to most of the other people in terms of the issues that we face. We have same type of public relations problem. I don't think it's any secret that the safety record in some of the elements of the helicopter industry has not been acceptable. When you compare it on a per 100,000 hours flown, it is in fact really rather acceptable in, when you look at the global helicopter community and International Trade Association statistics. But whether I like it or not, we tend to have more high profile accidents and we get more public relations. The attitude we have, I think, is like most people, one accident's too many. So we're not really focused on the per 100,000. It's the fact that we have these accidents that are occurring and we're going after them. We've created the International Safety Helicopter Safety Team. I'm honored to be the co-chair of that initiative, and HAI is the co-sponsor. And the basic attempt that we're going to make is to reduce the accident rate in the helicopter industry by 80% over the next 10 years. We've got a lot of expert people involved in this on a full-time basis. We're following the CAS model for the airline initiative, and we have every expectation that we're going to be able to succeed with this initiative. We've got implementation and analysis teams working on it, and we've also focused on safety management systems. HAI has put out a DVD, a safety management system, for the small operators, and we're targeting the small helicopter operators because 85% of our industry is small helicopter operators. They operate 1 to 5 aircraft. It's not the large companies that everybody reads about. So this audience right here is our target audience, quite frankly. And that's where we're going after aggressively in the safety arena. In terms of community awareness, same problem, same issue as the our fixed-wing counterparts. We have a number of initiatives that we've started. We have one that I think, if you have a chance, stop by the FAA Pavilion. And we've created a DVD, A Day in the Life Of. And what it does is it actually explains all the missions that helicopters do on a day-to-day basis that benefit society. And the people, the public basically, doesn't even know that this is going on. Let me just throw a couple of numbers at you to maybe give you an orientation of what I'm talking about. Helicopters basically save lives above all else, and that's one of the missions we're most proud of. In terms of EMS, there's 750 HEMS helicopters that operate daily, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in this country, and they're carrying 400,000 patients every year. There's also 400 helicopters that serve 3,000 utility companies, and they construct, they inspect, they maintain over 5 million miles of electric transmission and distribution lines. In terms of other mission profiles, there's 700 helicopters in the Gulf of Mexico alone that fly over 1 million flights a year. 10,000 passengers or workers every day get transported back and forth to work in the Gulf of Mexico to go to 4,000 platforms out there. That initiative alone, from an economic standpoint, contributes 3% of the gross national product, which is almost $400 billion a year that those aircraft are assisting. In terms of the wildlife, natural environment, there's 360 helicopters that on a daily basis fly 28,000 hours a year on missions, and they're protecting the environment through their efforts of aerial firefighting. Also, they do heli logging. When you do heli logging, you eliminate the need to create logging roads. And in essence, if you went into an area in our environment, which we're very conscious of, and you saw a heli logging operation, once the helicopters leave and do their mission, you wouldn't have known they were there. There would be no trace of that activity.